Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again!
Gavin keeps it. Skin on goal, look at that pass. Hey, look! Goal, Columbus!
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey's denied again! And Donovan has scored! Can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
This is the beautiful game.
Oh, it's incredible!
Described by two uglies.
Stupendous!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
This is a thing of genius.
Welcome in. Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
And lots to get to this week in Bone and Beam United. 2 weeks in a row, Beam. Should we even talk about it?
I think we should get an award for that, T-Bone.
Yes, indeed. We have got plenty to unpack with the crew. They move on to the Eastern Conference Finals, so we will talk about that quite a bit. Champions League action continues on. Some of it has happened before we've recorded this podcast. We'll talk about what has happened and break down what could happen. Also, what is happening with Arsenal? We've not talked about them in a while. So lots to unpack there from the world of soccer. But Beamer, how's your week been so far? How you doing?
It's been good. Yeah, good, man. Had a fun time. Soccer Podcasting Day is Wednesday, the 2nd of December. So if you're a fan of this show, and if you also happen to peruse the Morning Juice, I was doing the show by myself this morning for an hour because one of my co-hosts slept through their alarm. So It was great. I got to say, I'm very fired up this morning, Bone. So that's good. But the rest of the week has been going great. Just kind of hanging out this week, not doing much, getting in the Christmas spirit, put our Christmas lights up this past weekend. Yeah. So we're all ready for that season.
Yeah. We got snow this week, so it actually feels a little bit like Christmas. So yeah, I'm with you on that, man. I actually, a buddy of mine bought me a beer advent calendar where
I've seen those. One of my buddies has one with wine, like little half bottles of wine. So I've seen that as well. It looks amazing.
Yeah. And this one, it's all German beers. So I cracked the first one open. Like my ritual so far for the first few days is I pop it open, I take the can out, I inspect it, I see that it's good, and then I put it in the fridge, and then at night I have the beer. So it's a nice, like, every morning I've set something to look forward to of opening up and finding out what beer I get. And it's a pint. Like it's a big can, not just a, you know, regular 12-ounce. So then I put that in the fridge, it cools all day, and then I've got a nice cold beer to drink at the end of the night from somewhere in Bavaria or wherever else in Germany. So
exactly. Yeah. I've got to say too, I know we do some of our beer stuff here. I'm usually not a fan of the Christmas ale. Mm-hmm. Like I have, like, I don't know, Bone, six of them during a season of Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they're a little bit too heavy for me. You know, you kind of treat them like a dessert beer. I don't know what they did to the recipe this week or this year for the Great Lakes Christmas ale, but it's stunning this year.
Like
last year was a little bit too heavy for me. I know they change up the recipe every now and again. It's so crisp. It's very light as well. That's not very light. It's still a heavy Christmas ale, but I tell you what, man, Meredith and I, we enjoyed that a couple of days ago, a couple of nights ago, put a brown sugar cinnamon rim on there.
Oh, what an idea. Man, it was fantastic. What a great idea. Look at you being extra with that. I love it. That's excellent.
Well, that was her idea to do that. Because we went up actually one time to the Great Lakes Brewery and had it straight from the source. And ever since then, I cannot have one without having the rim. It's special.
That's good. Well, good for her for coming up with that idea and suggesting that. But that's awesome. Yeah, I love the Christmas ales personally. I have not had Great Lakes yet. I like the Shiner Christmas Ale. The Shiner Bock people do that. Yep. And that's one I always get. I actually did go get a mixer, like, six pack where you just pick your own. And I picked all Christmas beers so I could try, like, a bunch of different ones. So, yeah, maybe I'll have a report on that next time we do a podcast. Maybe I'll have
fun fact gotten a few about of those. It. The guy who does the 12 Dogs of Christmas, right? That brewery?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the old brewmaster for Great Lakes then switched over. And he was in charge of the 12 Dogs of Christmas Ale. So it's very similar to their old Christmas Ale and what they do. So okay. I know there's a lot of, like, rivalry going on in Ohio about the 12 Dogs of Christmas versus the Great Lakes Christmas Ale. So if you want to have a taste test yourself, you can do that.
I'll have to go. Yeah, go find both of them and then make it a whole evening. I think that sounds good to me. And you got
maybe even throw some Japanese whiskey in there.
Yeah, let's get into that. Cause so the Crew defeated Nashville 2-0. And I got more stressed about this game, Beamer, than I have in a long time. Just not even because I thought the Crew were necessarily going to lose it, but the Crew had the opportunity sitting in front of them. They beat New York, and then Nashville doing what they did to Toronto. I thought, man, this sets up pretty nicely to get them through to a place where they could be in the conference finals fairly quickly and without much resistance. This is setting up well. And then all the COVID stuff hit last week. And of course, I'm on pins and needles, like who's going to be out? Is it going to be half the starting lineup? You know, all those worries. And then I remembered who they're playing. They're playing Nashville, which is a team that has adopted the yellow soccer team motif. Mm-hmm. And the backstory on that is they thought, MLS thought, the Crew were going to be out of the league. There wouldn't be a Crew. So we don't care if you pick yellow as your primary color because, hey, it's the Crew anyway. But, they're not going to be here. You can adopt all that stuff. They even started calling themselves a massive club, which is totally ripping off the Crew. And I thought, man, this first-year team cannot come in with their yellow soccer team imitation, whatever, cosplay, and then come in and beat the Crew. Like, no way, man. You can't. I can't have the Crew cosplayers beating the Crew. That's not going to fly. And so as the game wore on, I got more and more nervous that that was going to happen, especially with Eloy Room being out. I was worried about it going to penalties and all that stuff. So, yeah, I was very stressed. And so I did open up a bottle of Japanese whiskey, which I had bought and was told was good. And I never tried it until that day. And, buddy, I drank a lot of that because it was smooth and I was nervous. And thankfully, it worked out. It became celebratory because the Crew defeated Nashville 2-0. So, yeah, it worked out okay.
I got to say, it was so luckily for me, I was I had two things going on at once. So if you listen to the show, I am a Chicago Bears fan, unfortunately. So they were playing Sunday Night Football at the same time as the Crew game kicked off. So I got to watch the first 20 minutes. And then I actually switched to the Crew on the stream and was watching the Bears on the TV. And I have to say, you're right. It wasn't good for my blood pressure because watching the Crew game in accordance to watching the Bear game all synced up and having them getting their brains beaten by the Packers on a national TV game was not good for my mental psyche. And then having the Crew in just a dreck of a nil-nil game, which any goal at any point could result in you crashing out of the MLS playoffs. Like, I was so nervous. You're right, Bone. Like, it was horrible.
It was
for me to do that. And then, I mean, luckily, you know, we'll get into it. I mean, it gets into extra time. And as you know, everybody out there, if you're watching this game, like it is, you're on pins and needles, man, because you realize anything can happen at any point. And especially the way that the game flow had been working, it's just one goal was going to win the game. And it didn't matter which team that it came from. Teams didn't look like scoring. And so, yeah, for that to happen on Sunday night at 8 o'clock, like, you know, before you're getting ready to go to bed before a whole nother, you know, work week, like I was so like just amped up on Sunday night. I didn't end up going to bed until like 12 or 12:30 with the 4 o'clock alarm clock because like my blood pressure was just through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt bad even texting you during the game. And I thought, well, he's probably up because of the Bears and the Crew all going on. I'm sure there's no way he's sleeping, even though I know you got to get up early. But yeah, that game, the way it started out, where the Crew were on the front foot, they looked good. I thought, all right, they're moving the ball around. They'll be fine. They're going to break this team down. They'll get a goal. We'll be all right. And then about 20, 25 minutes in, Nashville started taking control, and they had some legit opportunities, probably the best opportunities of the half. And, I mean, one goes off the crossbar. They had a couple that were blocked and one that was saved. I mean, it was hairy. It was chances galore coming for Nashville, and that's where I got panicked. That's when I thought, oh man, if this somehow goes, because my biggest fear was Nashville gets the first goal and they're already one of the most defensive minded teams in the league. They didn't play like it against Toronto. They were actually, it was a pretty open game, I thought, and I was just worried, oh no, if they get the first goal, you're not going to see that openness anymore. They're going to close it up. They got the defender of the year. They got a solid back line. This is just going to be miserable. The Crew are going to have to really work to find a goal to tie it. And then even with that, are you going to be able to, they'll probably just want to take it to penalties and then go against your backup goaltender, Andrew Tarbell. And so I was very concerned about all that. And so 90 minutes goes by, I'm more nervous. They finally, and in the second half, they did, the Crew, I thought, generated some better chances, but it just couldn't find it. You know, it was just, and I pictured, man, they're going to have all these chances, and then Nashville's going to get some crap lucky goal, or not lucky, but you know what I mean. Just something that bounces right, it goes the wrong way, hits a defender's leg, something, and I was so worried about it. Then you get into stoppage time, and thankfully, the Crew players that are paid to play at this time and in these moments, they showed up. So Lucas Zelarayán had the ball on the left channel, man, down the sideline.
Talk about that flick for a second from Zelarayán.
That pass is one of the that's why you pay that man a ton of money, is to make a pass like that in that situation.
Yeah, it was stunning. You know, I mean, you can go through, and the ball too by Zardest, Pedro Santos also was equally amazing because he threaded it through three defenders, but I don't know the wherewithal for Lucas Zelarayán to understand that he's got Zardes just, you know, bolting down the field. All he needs to do, he doesn't even need to beat the defender, just flick it on and get it there. You're right. I mean, was he directly affecting the play, you know, in the final third? No, but he set him up to be able to do the work that Jassy Zardes was able to put that ball through to Pedro. And so, I mean, it really was, you know, pretty amazing. Like, I know that Zelarayán wanted to score a goal so bad, Boney tried so many shots outside of the box and was, you know, all these things, was trying to just really, you know, spur his team on from a single moment of greatness, but it ended up being the pass to Giassi, which was the one that ended up sealing the game. But that flick right there, I mean, it shows you that that's why you go and spend the money. Without that pass right there, maybe you're right, maybe it does go to penalty kicks, but Zelarayán and what he did with that pass was is truly jaw-dropping.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, for me, that pass was, you just have kind of like a gaggle of guys, everyone's getting tired, it's late in the game, and Nashville haven't played those three games in 8 days. That probably didn't help them in that moment, because they were probably just a little bit not as sharp as they could have been. Sure. But that's the type of moment where you just could, a lot of times in MLS, see that ball get kicked around the midfield, and then it bounces off someone, goes out of bounds, everybody walks back, and that's lost. And so for him to just kind of pick his head up, know what was going on, and find a perfectly weighted pass out of all that kind of muddling chaos, get it up the field. And then, yeah, Jassy from there, that pass to Pedro was perfectly weighted. It was the type of pass where it didn't take a lot for Pedro to redirect it, but he hammered it. You know what I mean? Like it had some weight on the pass initially that gives it a nice, if you redirect it properly, it's still going to go pretty fast. But then he had perfectly in stride, was able to just take it and not even have a touch, one touch right to the goal. That's what you want. So yeah, everything was good with that, and those guys all showed up in the right moment to make that play happen. And then you obviously tack on the second goal with Jassy, you know, hanging out, and Luis Diaz with a nice ball to find him. And I thought Luis Diaz had a pretty good game too. I thought he was, you know, for the majority of the game, probably the most lively player the Crew had on the field. I'm not saying he's the most skilled and connected everything, but nice to see him be involved in getting, you know, the second goal on the board. And that was all she wrote after that. That was that's when I was celebrating and feeling good and like, all right, now the nerves are gone and now it's just going to be fun. So,
yeah, a lot of the Crew fans too were. But I mean, going back to that first goal, you know, it had been a titanic struggle all night. And that was Nashville's MO, like you said, right? I mean, you know, you knew exactly what they were going to do. And especially as we got into the later instances of the game, it was obvious that their game plan was to get the penalties. All right, you know, we're not going to park the bus, but we feel like we have a good enough defending midfield. We feel like we have a good enough team at the back end to be able to protect this, and we're just going to try our damnedest to try and get in to the two penalties. And last time we saw Andrew Tarbell, you know, against penalties, Bone, it was against Minnesota down in the bubble, and he struggled. So I understand that was Nashville's game plan going in, especially you're on the road. Like you said, you played three games in 8 days. We got tired legs. Let's just try to do anything that we can to defend this game to the death. And you're right. I mean, Giassi too, that ball that he put through to Pedro, like, and then the finish. I mean, you know, the finish was great as well.
Yeah.
You easily, you know, mess that opportunity up. You can pull it, you can push it, you can send it over the net. It was calm, cool, collected, but that pass from Giassi to Pedro. And then before that, of course, Zelarayán over to Giassi as well. Like, You're right. I don't know if they played two, if that was their second game in 8 days, Bone, if they had been as well rested as the crew, does that happen? I'm not sure. I think it was a big gaffe by Walker Zimmerman coming over to try and challenge for that ball. They were able to catch him out on the counterattack, and that ended up being the difference in the game. But you're right. I mean, you couldn't really celebrate 1-0 because you know that they're going to try and be attacking, down the field the next time that they're able to get possession of the ball. But for the crew to get the second one there, I thought Giassi was rewarded with the goal. It was pretty amazing, man. But a team that hadn't allowed a goal, correct, in all MLS playoffs?
Yeah, they hadn't. And so that now that's over. Now they're gone. They're sitting at home. They can go enjoy Ernest Tubbs Record Store, whatever they do in Nashville when they're bored. They can go over there. Exactly. So they don't have anything to do.
Throw with Matt Duchene in the offseason.
I was going to say throw a catfish on the ice. I don't know, whatever their weird traditions are. Go have fun with that because you're home now. And yeah, the crew were just they found a way, and that's what the good teams do, is they find a way even against a team that's got, you know, nice strategy and all the momentum and all that other stuff. The crew are the better team, and they found a way to win. So I am hopeful for this game against New England on Sunday. It's going to be, again, the COVID stuff continues, right? There's now I think two more cases with the crew that have come forward that they've. One more case is confirmed. One more is inconclusive. So they're doing more testing to find out. So I don't know what that means because I was trying to look up what MLS's protocol is for getting back on the field. I want to say it's just two negative tests within a certain time period, more like what the ACC or the SEC has done. But I when it comes to college football, but I don't know that for sure. So I don't know if Eloy Room will be back yet for this game or not. I don't think there's any way to know that right now. I don't know. Maybe he is officially ruled out. If so, I apologize for not knowing that. But then, yeah, we'll have to find out who these other players are and hope that no further spread happens. I mean, that, you know, if you have too many more players test positive, they're going to cancel this game or postpone it at the very least. And MLS technically has a rule that if they can't find a window to play the game in, then the team with the COVID test that caused the cancellation is going to forfeit. I can't imagine them doing that for a conference final.
No,
I would hope not.
Not a representative for the MLS Cup.
No,
I'd be hard pressed to find that it's an actual result that would happen.
I hope not either. So yeah, that's where it stands right now. I'll give you quickly on New England, the preview that I would give, because I've heard a lot of people bring this up and say, oh, well, New England's an 8 seed, so they're not that good. You got to watch this team because New England is one of, if not, they're the probably hottest team in the playoffs right now because of the fact that they have Carlos Gil has come back. He's former Valencia Aston Villa player who he's a villain. Yes. He's been extremely good since his return from an Achilles injury. Last year, he was the MLS newcomer of the season with 10 goals and 14 assists. So he can get it done. He can put guys in good spots. And he did that in their game with Orlando on Sunday, where he put Gustavo Bo in a couple of times, and Gustavo Bo is also a guy you got to watch out for. Both those guys fought injuries all year. They're both now healthy. And I think if they were healthy all year, New England would not be an 8 seed. They would be a better seed than this. So yeah, they've got some talent. They don't let in a ton of goals, but they're not quite as good defensively as the crew are. Few teams in the league are, but those are your weapons you got to watch out for. And it's not just them. They've got other guys that can put it in too. Longtime MLS player Teal Bunbury is still there. He's, I think, got like 8 goals for them on the year, leads the team. But yeah, point being, the crew play their game. New England plays their game. It's going to be a hell of a matchup. It's great offense, very good defensive team, and you're going to see that play out. So question for me is, like, can guys like Darlington Nagbe raise their game? He wasn't, I don't think, as sharp as you'd like to see him. They're going to need him to be really sharp against New England if they're going to win this game. But that's my quick preview of what they've got Sunday. All that with the asterisk of COVID. So,
right.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think what you're just looking for this game, you know, like you said, the big asterisk being, you know, COVID testing protocols, like, all right, not a stout defensively, right? You know, they have some firepower. And I think what you're ultimately hoping as a crew fan, like, go out there and assert your will, like, play the style that Caleb Porter wants you to play, how this team is designed to play, everything through the midfield, solid defensively. If you get Aloy Room back, then that's great. But I would just say, don't play into the style of the reps, right? I mean, You can't do that. You're at home with a chance to go to the finals, Bone. Like, you want this to be your game. You do not want to lose this game at home. Force them to play into your style.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agreed. And it's going to be a fun matchup for sure at 3 o'clock. All the action will be on the Fan. And of course, I believe the game itself is on ABC. So yeah, it'll be, you know, available for everyone to watch. So we'll be good there and looking forward to it. Let's switch gears. Let's talk a little Champions League, because we are in the midst of, what is it, match day 5, I think, is what we're on, 5 of 6
for the group. That is correct, sir. Yes.
Yeah. So probably the biggest result to come out of the first day of match day 5 is Real Madrid losing to Shakhtar Donetsk again.
Twice. Like, that's the second time they've lost to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they did, and this time they lost in Ukraine. So yeah, this is not good for Real Madrid. They are tied with Shakhtar on points. Shakhtar has a worse goal differential, but they've won the head-to-head twice, so no issues there. Now this sets up very... That group is so weird, man, with Borussia Mönchengladbach leading it with 8 points, Shakhtar and Real on 7, and Madrid on 7, and then Inter Milan is on 5 points. Like, it's such a weird group, man. I don't think anybody would have predicted that order before this group play, but that's where we stand right now. What do you think that says for Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid? Like, how deep are the problems there, do you think, or Beamer?
Yeah, it's just listen, man, the guy won 3 consecutive, you know, Champions League titles. Like, I don't know what you want me to say about Real Madrid. Like, it's obviously that they have the history, and you know, this year, not quite their year. They're not up to the standard what they're used to, you know, having seen over there in Madrid. It was an uninspired performance yesterday. I watched basically that whole match, and they just didn't look like they were in it. Rafael Varane switched off. He had a bad play, which cost him the first goal, and then a great strike from Shakhtar to put him up 2-0, Bone. So it is it's quite an interesting group, though. You look at Shakhtar and what they are. I believe that their last game is against Inter, and then Real Madrid will take on Mönchengladbach at the Bernabeu, which I don't know. It's fascinating, right? Because you look at this, like you said, Mönchengladbach is at 8, Shakhtar and Real are at 7, and Inter is at 5. But Mönchengladbach could have had a chance yesterday to put themselves away and to put themselves into 9 points, where I guess, you know, they still would have had competition at least, but all they would needed to do was get a point against Real Madrid to get in. Now you go into the Bernabeu and you're going to likely, I mean, you know, if you draw, that's great too. Likely, you're going to hope to win that game. You know, Real's going to be having all that firepower, but I got to say, they got totally jobbed yesterday. Mönchengladbach did. Yeah. I'm watching that game towards the end, and if Inter were to draw, they had to win, right? They were sitting on 2 points before match day 5. They had to win that game to stay alive in the competition, and Inter was good. You know, their attacking play was great. I think you had Romelu Lukaku miss an opportunity. You had Lautaro Martinez miss an opportunity as well. And so it was really wild. But at the end of the game, Mönchengladbach scored a goal, and Brielle Mbolo was standing in front of Milan's keeper. And he was offside T-boned by, I don't even know, 6 inches. And this ball's coming out from outside of the 18, from the right-hand side. He's kind of blocking the goalie. But if he was onside, the goalie wouldn't have been able to get there anyways. They called him as an interference of play that would have tied things up 3-3, I believe, in the 88th minute. And I got to say, I mean, I'm sitting here watching that game yesterday. Like, there's no way that you can call this interference. Like, I know that he's offside. I understand the rule. Was he blocking the goalie? Maybe. But it had no direct effect on the play. And they go to VAR and they overturn it. Inter survives another day. They have an opportunity to get back in there. And now Mönchengladbach, with a massive, massive undertaking of having to go to the Bernabeu next Wednesday and get a positive result. It's or not even a positive result. I guess, you know, you get the draw and you're going to be into the next round, the round of 16. But that group is just a mess right now, and it leads for great drama.
It's going to be absolute must see TV next week, and that'll be a fun one to watch. Like, both the games in that group, and I'm a little back to Real Madrid very quickly. I'm a little interested in what Zinedine Zidane had to say. They're at the point now where they are asking if he will resign after this. Like, the media is asking that. He says he will not. Real's problems are not just in Champions League. They've won only four of their last 11 games in all competitions. So it's not going as well as you would think for Real Madrid. So, like you said, they've got the firepower, and this group, as bad as it has been for them, it's not like this group, they come out of it winning this group theoretically. Like, there's nothing that says they couldn't just advance, be the top team out of this group, and then, you know, your momentum changes and suddenly you go on to become Real Madrid again. But yeah, it's not anywhere close to what people would have thought, you know, coming into this, or certainly you or I would have thought coming into this group. So yeah, not a great result for them there. Where else, what other results did you want to talk about from the first day of match day five?
Yeah, it was pretty good yesterday. Was watching it. And like I said last week when we were doing the show, the Galazzo show does a great job of really pointing everything out and, you know, whipping you around to all these different contests. And it was really cool. That was the group that you were really focused on, right? I mean, was that group with Real Madrid and Inter and Mönchengladbach and Shakhtar. But otherwise, I mean, your eyes kind of naturally drift towards Atletico and Bayern. I mean, that's a massive game, right? Yeah. You look at that and you look at the table right now. It's pretty wild, man. Salzburg got a win over Moscow yesterday. Atletico's got 6 points. They were up for a long, long time in that game. And here he comes, Thomas Müller himself, one of the smartest players in the entire world. I forget what minute it was, late in the game, Bone. He has a little drag back, gets fouled in the box, penalty. Bayern escaped with a draw. And so you're looking at that now. And yeah, both teams, we know what they are. You know Atletico and what they're designed to do, obviously, is to sit back there and, you know, really defend a lead. Joao Felix does that. It was great. But I will say this, that matchup with Salzburg and Atletico Madrid, I mean, that's for a spot. You know, that's for a spot in the round of 16. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that game is at. But anyways, yeah, I mean, if Salzburg win that game, T-Bone, they are into the round of 16, a draw or a loss. We'll see Atletico go home, which for Diego Simeone would not be a great thing for him. And then yesterday, Liverpool as well. I mean, we know that they're into the next round, smooth sailing. They won the game against Ajax with basically a reserve squad. So Liverpool getting it done. I know that Jurgen Klopp has been, you know, not the most friendly of characters this year with the schedule in the Premier League. But yeah, Ajax need a win in their next game. To get through. Chelsea, as we know, is through. They play tomorrow. Or excuse me, today, I guess.
Yeah.
With, you know, the other match days. But, yeah, Man City and Porto, they're through to the next game. So that was kind of it yesterday from the Champions League. But it was, I don't know, man, all eyes kind of drift to that Group B. Like I said, again, with those four teams, Mönchengladbach, Shakhtar, Real, and Inter, because all four have an opportunity to move into the next round. So pretty
I'm rooting for the Germans and Ukrainians in that group. Let's go. Let's see what let's go with the underdogs. Let's have that. And then let's hear from all the drama from the other two teams, the powerhouses. That'll be fun. By the way, you mentioned Salzburg, which it's always, I like to point this out. Jesse Marsh, their head coach, is American coach, played for the U.S. national team, has been talked about as possibly, you know, in previous, you know, conversations, could he become the U.S. men's national team? And I'm sure, depending on how things go with Greg Berhalter, who hopefully will have this thing turned around and go in the right direction, as it already seems to be. But if not, Jesse Marsh will always be a name that you're going to hear about. But this is a guy who played at MLS for many, many years, played for Chivas USA, which is not a thing anymore, but it was, yeah. And he played for them. So I find that interesting. He coached New York. They were very good when he was there. Obviously, Red Bull promoted him within. You would think, depending on how things go, eventually he's going to have a chance up at Leipzig. If like, they've groomed him for that moment, right? But he's doing the good work there and getting into Champions League. I mean, that's got to be cool for him, given that, like, Leipzig has their thing in the Champions League. They're obviously the further along in the bigger club, but man, you have him also coaching multiple years in the Champions League. That's counts for something, I would think, for his career. And I won't be surprised if someday he is coaching in the Premier League. Like, I think he's got that on him, that he could eventually get to that level. I think he's that good. So yeah, but that's a fun thing to watch. Speaking of Americans, if you do watch the Galazzo show, depending on when you hear this podcast, if you're watching it on Wednesday, you've got Leipzig in action. So Tyler Adams is playing. Chelsea, Pulisic probably will get some run there because he's been hurt. I would assume he gets back in. especially since they're already through, and just to make sure he gets some minutes. Dortmund with, you know, Gio Reyna is there.
Just saw this too, Bone. Regardless of the result against Lazio, a Bruges loss or draw today will propel Dortmund into the round of 16. If that happens, Gio Reyna will become the seventh American to qualify for the knockout rounds this season.
Well, and on Club Bruges, Evan Horvath, who is their goalkeeper, is an American. So, like, either way, if either of those clubs go through, that's another American qualified through.
Colin Farrell, not a fan of Club Bruges. I'll tell you that much right now.
That's fine. He doesn't have to be.
That was a deep Eric reference. All right. Anyone out there gets that.
There you go. Barcelona with Serginho Dest and Conrad De La Fuente. Both those guys are in action. And Juventus with Weston McKennie. Like, just sit back and think about that for a second. Like, all the American players that are, it's not even like weird to see, oh, wow, there's an American player playing in Champions League. Like, this is just the way it is. Like, this team that is assembled, I'm telling you, in 2022, we could be in for something. This could be legit, man. You got all these kids who are under 23 years old that are all playing big minutes in Champions League games, and it's not even like, will they get put in? Will they have it? It's like, no, if they're healthy, they're going. They're playing. They're playing in these big minutes because they know that this is the right lineup to put out there. So I'm excited about it, man. Just keep these guys healthy and let's go. But yeah, if you're watching the Galazzo show today, you're going to, it's like, no matter what game they flip to, you're pretty much going to have a chance to watch one of the U.S. national teamers out there. So,
which is amazing.
Yeah. I can't, it's still hard to wrap my brain around, but I'm glad we live in that moment. All right, let's talk a little bit about Arsenal. We haven't talked about them in a while. We have, brought up their struggles last year. They obviously had them quite a bit. And then they've since moved on to Mikel Arteta, who is currently their manager. And it's not gone well for him. They are now enduring their worst ever start to a Premier League season. And that is all due to the leadership, not all due to his leadership, but under the guidance of Mikel Arteta. What is not good is that Unai Emery is coaching at Villarreal, and they are currently sitting ahead of Real Madrid and Barcelona in the standings.
Yeah, Barcelona's what, in seventh or eighth?
Yeah, they're both down this year. They've not been starting off as well as they would like. So, Villarreal's third in La Liga, and that's a year to the day since Unai Emery was dismissed by Arsenal. That was the day that Arsenal lost to Wolves and now has their worst start. So they're a year on from that move. Are they in a better spot than they were this time last year? What say you, Beamer?
I don't know, Bone. It's just so hard to predict, especially this year in the Premier League. I know the run of fixtures, right? It's all crammed in there. They want to get it in a normal time frame. These dudes have been playing for a long, long time, going back to last season, had a shorter off season. It's just really hard to get a grasp of Arsenal. And it's just, I know that people for so, so long, you know, and us too. I mean, when this was happening, Arsene Wenger, right? You kind of learn to obviously respect what he has done in the history of the club. But the one thing you could always say with Arsene Wenger is that the dudes were going to play for him on a week-in, week-out basis. Maybe you were less talented, but they were going to give it their all. Arsenal right now look lost. They look like they're absolutely lost, T-Bone, and it's shocking to see, right? Yeah. I mean, what are you doing? You know, it's just, I don't know. They don't have an identity right now. They're having a big-time identity crisis. It doesn't look like they're playing for him. I guess maybe at the end of the year we'll see this. I know it's still early on with only 10 games played. We're, you know, more than a quarter way through the season. But it's just – it's so hard to get a grasp of these big clubs right now with the way that they're struggling. And it leads you to ask these questions, like, is the talent in the Premier League getting better? Is it getting deeper and deeper? Or is Arsenal right now just ending up struggling and can't find their way out? Is it bad transfer business? Is it bad, you know, game planning? Is it bad coaching, bad culture? What is it? And so right now they're just an absolute mess. They're a shell of themselves, what they were.
Yeah, they really are. And I mean, if you let's just run through quickly what they have done this year in the Premier League. All right, let's go through their, like, tell me where the big win is that you see that Arsenal shouldn't have won this game, but they found a way to. Okay. And maybe there's one. I think there's one. But they beat Fulham 3-0 to start the season off. They should have won that game. They beat West Ham 2-1. Should have won that game.
There you go. That's your one you shouldn't have won.
All right. Well, yeah, you know, actually, yeah, you actually maybe could say that this year, but they would tell themselves they should be able to win that game most years. Then, yeah, you've got Liverpool beats them 3-1. They beat Sheffield United, who's just a complete dumpster fire this year.
Yep.
Shockingly, I mean, they're...
It's the worst start to a Premier League season ever by a team.
Yeah,
by the way.
We've played 10 games
and they have 1 point.
We could do a whole show just on Sheffield United's problems, because their issues, man, their whole system is based on everybody pulling in the right direction and doing everything exactly the same way. They've had injuries and they've had a couple guys who just flat out sucked, and now their whole system doesn't work and everybody can just run through their midfield. They're terrible. But Arsenal should be able to beat a team that is that bad, that they're having the worst historic start to a season ever. They did. They beat them 2-1. Man City beat them 1-0. Played them. I mean, Arsenal played them tough, but Man City's having their struggles as well. Leicester beat Arsenal 1-0. Arsenal did get Manchester United. Maybe that's the one you could say too. I know you're, frustrated with your team, but they've been playing better. The last few years, they've been a better team than Arsenal is, and unfortunately...
That was a horrible performance by United as well. They couldn't do anything in the midfield. That's the thing. If you're Arsenal and you're going to do that, be that kind of a team that frustrates team in the midfield and wins balls and challenges and pulls strings. Like I said, they're having an identity crisis. Are you a high-flying team? Are you a midfield team? Are you a defending team? Right now, you get a kind of a mix of everything. And like you were saying with Sheffield, where they're so out of sync with each other from what they're supposed to be doing, Arsenal are doing that, but they don't actually have an identity where they can cling on to. So it's almost every single week there's a new problem that pops up with them because you don't know what you're good at.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is what happens with them is, so they'll have a performance like that against Manchester United, and then they go to the Europa League and they smoked a team 4-1. Molde is who they beat. Okay, great. And then they come back and lose 3-0 to Aston Villa. And it's just
hammered at home.
Yeah, hammered. And then tie Leeds 0-0 with a red card thrown in just for fun. And then that 2-1 loss to Wolves. That's been their season. And so the only thing I guess you could point to is in Europa League, they've been doing fine, but they've been playing teams that are far below their caliber and they should be able to beat. I'm sure are looking at Europa League as their saving grace for this year and just hope that they can, take momentum from that and bring it back to the Premier League. But man, it's going to be a rough stretch for them. I will be shocked if Arsenal is sitting in the top 10 come Boxing Day. I'll be shocked if that's the case. I don't see that being likely. They're struggling right now, and I don't know what the way out is for them. So
yeah, I mean, especially you look at their upcoming schedule, right? I mean, you got the derby match against Tottenham this weekend. News on that: Harry Kane is going to be out. Jose Mourinho just announced today.
Oh, all right.
And maybe that's helpful for them. Obviously, for Arsenal, not having to mark him. Next week they're at home against Burnley. Okay. Then they're at home against Southampton. Okay. You're on the road against Everton, which is not easy. And then on Boxing Day, T-Bone, they are at home against Chelsea. So you look at that. I don't know how many points are on the table right now for Arsenal. I really don't. I have no clue right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to – they are going to struggle through to the first part of next year. And then maybe they get some reinforcements in the transfer window. Maybe they gel in some way. Maybe they fire Mikel Arteta. I don't know. And then maybe something spurs them. But, yeah, right now, short of them just playing differently than they have all year from what we've seen – They've got a lot to fix, and I don't know that you can just expect that to all turn around without some external force applied. You know what I mean? Something will need to change within that team to be able to get back to competing. And right now, yeah, they've just it looks bleak for them. So sorry, Arsenal fans. I know there's a lot of you in this city, and I've been to the Arsenal supporters bars occasionally, and it's a good time to hang out, but. Man, it's rough right now for Arsenal fans. So not that many of us are going to cry for you, but still, it's a tough deal. So
I will shed a tear for Arsenal when Arsenal fans shed a tear for Manchester.
Yes, very well said. Speaking of Arsenal, I almost forgot about this. I'll bring it up very briefly. One of the best players in Arsenal history, Thierry Henry, is managing Montreal Impact. Right? In MLS. He took over that job. He's been their coach. They didn't have a great year this year. They have decided to change their name. Montreal Impact were a team.
Really? I didn't even know this.
Yes, this just came down this week. They've been the Montreal Impact, or Les Impact, you know, in Montreal. They have been that for 30 years. Prior to them joining MLS, they were obviously around previous to that in various, you know, Canadian minor leagues and things like that. So they have a history. They're one of those teams like the Sounders where this name kind of predates their franchise a little bit. They have decided to change it, and I hope you are ready for this. They are going to be...
You know what? I'm going into this blind.
Here you
I
go.
I have no clue what it is.
Here you
I'm
go.
Expecting it to be a beautiful disaster.
They're changing it to Montreal FC because everybody has to just...
Stop. Can we stop that?
I know. Why? Why does everybody's history have to adopt someone else's history in this? When it comes to soccer in North America, why does everyone so bad want to just glom on to what teams do in Europe? When,
well, you know what? I can actually see Montreal doing that because, I mean, it is mostly a French Canadian populated city because they, I mean, it's literally the one city you can look at and say, all right, if anyone is going to do it, it can be Montreal, but still it is very stupid.
Yeah. But even with that, like, I don't know, man, like
Montreal Saint-Germain is what they should call it.
Right. Like, I guess you could go and, you could have some, I just don't understand why everyone is so afraid of their own history. Like, Montreal Impact have 30 years of history. Why right. do you want to throw that away to be like, no, we're Montreal FC? Well, what, so what? Like, I understand. Do people get so worried about that, that if, like, someone in France or England or Germany picks up, you know, whatever tablet they're reading their soccer news on and they see that, you know, Montreal Impact have won CONCACAF Champions League, you know, and like they've taken over, they've dominated MLS, and they've signed all these great players or whatever. Do you think they're going to go, oh, but their name's the Impact? How stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what? Are if you're good enough that you're going to draw attention from Europe and people are going to pay attention to what you're doing, which they should be because Thierry Henry's managing your team, of course people are paying attention to it. What does that matter? Like, they're going to, your embarrassment should be not being good. That should be your embarrassment, not the name of your stupid team. I hope the crew never succumb to that because I know there's been, you know, little rumors and pushes previously. I don't think that'll ever happen. I think the current ownership gets it, but, oh, yeah. You don't need Columbus FC. You don't need Montreal FC. You just be who you are.
Be you. Yes. Be you, Matt Nagy.
Your guy. It all comes back to the Bears. One final thought before we get out of here. I did want to bring up the passing of Diego Maradona. So we recorded last week's episode, and then before we got it posted, the news came out that he had died at the age of 60 of a heart attack. And, you know, you and I are too young to have really appreciated him in his prime.
No
I
doubt.
Mean, in 86 in that World Cup, I was 4 years old. You were not a thing yet. So, then no. That's okay.
Nor was I close to being born.
No, and that's fine. But in my years of watching soccer, he is unavoidable, right? Whether you have just watched World Cup games and you've seen him at Argentina matches just screaming his head off and cheering and crying and all that stuff, whether you have read all the tabloid stuff about his various addiction problems and money issues and things like that. But also, I think it's unavoidable that when you watch like any highlights of any World Cup, like if it's a historical perspective of highlights, they're going to show him multiple times. Yes. Because of, you know, obviously the hand of God goal in 86. The second goal he scored in that game was legitimately one of the best goals I've ever seen in my life.
He danced through an entire team.
Yes. And the announcer for Argentina that day, I don't know if you've heard that radio call where he says this in Spanish, but the translation is, how did you leave so many Englishmen laying on the ground and get an entire country as a clenched fist to scream Maradona? Like, it's just, or to scream Argentina, something like, it's just so like, how did that guy have that in the moment? Like, to say yeah. that, but like the best soccer players in the world, I think more so than any other sport. I don't get this in baseball. I don't get this in football, maybe a little bit in basketball. You see it. With guys like Kobe or LeBron or Michael Jordan, but like very few times in any other sport do I think a player has the capacity to bring people to tears with the way they play the game. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are few, and it's not a ton of players that can do it in soccer, but you see the way people reacted to this man passing, and you see the way that, like, in Naples, in Italy, you know, his time with Napoli, they did nothing before or since, but with him there, they won multiple championships. They, I believe, won Europe. Like, the way that there are hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets mourning this guy's death in a country where he lived for a few years, you know, like Argentina, it was like a national day of mourning, national week of mourning. I think that's just a testament to the beauty of soccer. Like, Diego Maradona himself is a very flawed individual, but the way that he played that game shows you how beautiful soccer can be. And I think that is what, at its core, that's what draws a lot of us to this game. And the cliche is it's a beautiful game and all that stuff, but it's the fact that occasionally you can see someone who does something where you just can't explain it, and you can understand why people are crying even if you aren't, you know. And that's, Diego Maradona was one of those talents that's what he did for people. That's what he could do in his greatest moments. And I think it's obviously it's sad that he's passed away at such a young age of 60, but yeah, that, I think the memories that he left will be forever with soccer fans.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, just look at what the guy did. Like you said, I mean, a whole nation on his shoulders, and you know, one of the greatest players to ever play the game, which is something not to scoff at all. And you know, Bone, for every one of the reasons you just listed off for, you know, what he did for the game and how incredible that he was, I mean, he had equally, if not more, transgressions off the field than he did on the field.
Sure.
Which I think, you know, is obviously, you know, sad for him, but I think it, you know, it added into kind of the lore of Diego Maradona and kind of what he was created into today. And yeah, it was an incredibly sad day. And I actually, literally, as soon as we got off, you know, this last podcast that we were doing, I texted you, and the wild thing, you know, as we know, it was 15 years to the day where George Best had passed away.
Yeah,
as well.
That's right. Yeah.
And look at them, obviously, you know, very similar circumstances, you know, maybe not George Best to the level that Maradona was at, but of course, one of the best to ever play the game. And you look at some of the similarities that they had when they got off the field. It was just, I don't know, it's such a weird, weird day how that kind of happens, you know, as you're remembering one and then you lose another. But no doubt the world of soccer was mourning Diego Maradona for, you know, can criticize him all he want for everything that he did off the field. But on the field, man, he was, I don't know, he was an alien. He was not of this world for some of the stuff that he had done.
Well, and consider this. I mean, they literally was talk last week of, should soccer retire the number 10 in his honor? Which the answer to that, by the way, is no, they should not. The beauty of soccer is that you don't retire numbers for most players. And certainly these numbers have meaning. Players like Maradona give the number 10 its meaning, right? I mean, that's part of why I think it is beautiful. And that's why you keep the number. But the fact that that was even discussed just tells you, again, for those who maybe are too young to remember him, or you just have seen highlights, like the passion that this guy inspired, I think, that's where I guess I leave it with him, is the anyone in the world who can inspire unity and passion and enjoyment in people, I think we should in some way try to comprehend why that player inspired that among so many. And so the reason that he did was because he played the game at a level few have ever seen. So he will be missed. And it reminds me, this is why you should watch every Messi game that you can watch, right? This is why you should watch Cristiano Ronaldo whenever you can. Like, we need to not take the players who are the greats for granted, because often I want to see them lose. Like, I want to see the best players not win, right? I mean, that's kind of like, if they're not on your team, why do you want to see them win? But it reminds me, like, I need to have more perspective and appreciate these players in their primes. And
well, we're also living with the two greatest of all time, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You know, you can down the road, Bone, I mean, 20, 30 years, however long, you know, we go on, we're going to realize what these two did is, I mean, it's never going to happen again.
No.
I'll say this right now. Soccer will go on for forever, and you will not see two players put up these kind of numbers in similar, or if not the same time period, ever again. It is
And what you will see happen over the next 30 years, and we will be very old, we will be drinking beers, and we will be yelling about this, is that some two good players will come through and play on opposing teams, and people will say, oh, this is like Ronaldo and Messi again. And we will be yelling, no, it's bleeping right. not. No, it's not. They're good players. They're not at that level. And I think that's, again, there have been people who said, oh, this guy's the next Diego Maradona. Like, the people who watched him don't say that. They say there is no other man like him, right? There was no other Pele. Like,
there is a Leo Messi, but there's not another Diego Maradona.
Yes, and he was inspired by Maradona, but he's not Diego Maradona. Like, sorry. I mean, as great as he is, and he's one of the greatest club players we've ever seen, his national team would like to know where the Diego Maradona is, right? I mean, like, that's the where I would leave that discussion. Not that that means Messi is any less of a player. It just means that's something you have to add to Maradona's legacy that you don't add to Messi's legacy right now. Maybe you will someday, but until that happens, this is where we are. So, I think it, may he rest in peace and you know, thoughts to his family and all the fans of his around the world. It's obviously a tough time. So we'll leave you on that. We'll hoist a cold one to him. I will hoist a German Christmas something or other from a advent calendar I got at Costco, or a buddy of mine got at Costco. but I will hoist that to him tonight. And I hope you hoist something to him as well, wherever you're drinking. So, Beamer, anything else for you for this weekend you got coming up?
No, not really. Just going to hang out today. Manchester United and PSG. Can't wait for the Parisians to put the Reds in a body bag. Say that.
So optimistic, and I can't blame you at all. That'll be it for us. I will say we hope to be back next week to preview up MLS Cup with the crew versus somebody. But either way, we will talk about that game with New England, assuming it is played. And I will tell you this, if it does get played after the game, I will maybe jump on Instagram Live again, because
that
was a bleep show. And maybe we'll have another one of those after a big win, let's hope. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Take care.